Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
The glass is officially half empty.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. A poll out this morning finds that more than half of Americans expect a recession within the next year. Hardly shocking, but it's the first time since that question was added to the poll that a majority predicted recession. The Reuters Zogby survey also found that a majority of people plan to use their tax rebate checks to pay down debt or pad their savings. That obviously wasn't the intention, but it does make sense that if you expect a downturn, you might prepare for it. Oil prices back near $100 a barrel have the stock markets concerned. The markets in Asia finished 2% to 3% lower today. European shares are down 1.5% so far. The Dow is at 12,337 after falling 11 points. The NASDAQ lost 15. The S&P 500 was down 1 point. European plane maker Airbus gave a glass half empty prediction today. The company said it'll probably sell half as many planes as last year. We're joined by our European correspondent, Stephen Beard, in London. Stephen, what reason did Airbus give?
Well, Airbus says this is really a reflection on how good things were last year. I mean, it was a record year. Airbus and Boeing between them took orders for 2,750 new planes, a lot of the demand coming from emerging markets. Industry analysts say both Boeing and Airbus will see a decline in new orders.
We hear about big orders like aircraft orders being a key economic figure. What might this suggest about the overall global economy?
Well, aircraft industry analysts say it doesn't really say too much at this stage. And a point that is worth making is that both Boeing and Airbus have more than enough work to keep them going. Airbus has a backlog of something like 3,400 aircraft to build. That's going to keep Airbus going for at least 6 years.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
China always seems to be cracking down on something. Today, it's internet cafes where kids play online games like World of Warcraft. The Chinese government says kids aren't supposed to be at these places and that the games are breeding juvenile crime. Bill Marcus has more from Shanghai.
It's 4 in the afternoon and ordinarily shy boys crowd around a computer screen in a smoky internet cafe. They've transformed themselves into kings, warriors, and soldiers, armed and dangerous, and lost in a fantasy world. National law requires customers to be 18 or older, but the college-age girl behind the counter has let in a number of gamers who are clearly younger, including this 15-year-old.
I play every day around 7 to 8 hours, and I enjoy it. I should have been doing my homework, but I feel bored, so I'm here.
China hopes to prevent underage gaming with random sweeps of the roughly 30,000 internet cafes nationwide. Internet analyst David Wolf.
These controls will affect internet cafes in the short run. I think it's going to hurt business.
That is, if the government is serious. But internet cafes may soon be the least of China's worries. In the next few years, interactive games will likely be available on the cell phones that almost half of China's 1.3 billion people now own. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, February 20th on Marketplace.org. A new study out today says it's harder than ever for the poor to go to college and get ahead. This study was underwritten by the Pew Charitable Trusts. It says education matters, but family status may matter more. Nancy Marshall Genza reports.
If you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, it's pretty hard to wrench it out. The study says the nation's wealthiest children still have a 23% chance of staying on top, even if they never go to college. And there are more rich kids than ever. John Morton is in charge of economic policy at the Pew Charitable Trusts.
The gap between the rich and the poor is the highest that we've seen since the 1920s.
One of the study's authors, Ron Haskins of the Brookings Institution, says the gap is growing because upper-income kids have built-in advantages from family business connections to upbringing.
And they learn correct behavior, not to hit, not to talk out of turn. Lots of kids from low-income families haven't mastered that yet.
Haskins says public preschool could help those kids. He's not talking about Head Start, though. He thinks it's gotten too big and bureaucratic. The key, he says, is smaller preschool programs run by the states. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
President Bush is talking trade and aid on his tour of Africa. The president received a ceremonial welcome in Ghana today. But across the continent in the Darfur region of Sudan, the fighting continues. More now from Gretchen Wilson.
President Bush is pledging $100 million to train and equip African peacekeepers who will serve in Darfur. He's highlighting U.S. sanctions on Sudan's leaders and companies, and he said human suffering ought to preempt commercial interests. That's a thinly veiled reference to China. China buys most of Sudan's oil exports. It faces growing pressure to help broker a peace deal between rebel groups and the Sudanese government. China's involvement in Sudan has been under the spotlight in advance of the Beijing Olympics. Today, the Beijing Olympic Games defended China's stance on Darfur and appealed to activists not to pressure sponsors to pull out. In fact, China's now urging the West to do more. According to today's state-run China Daily, officials want Western countries to use their sway with rebel groups to promote a settlement. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
One of the big stories out of China last year was toy safety. And at this week's International Toy Fair in New York, it's obviously been a big topic of conversation. All the recalls that were announced last year took millions of potentially harmful toys off the shelves, but there are many more still sitting there, especially at discount stores. Michael May has this report from Austin, Texas.
Bargain hunter Jennifer Martinez is going into this Family Dollar store in East Austin. She can buy each of her four children a toy for a dollar. She takes a careful look, though.
If it's something that's dangerous for them, something that has lead in it, I'm hoping it would say on there, give some kind of warning or something.
Martinez has reason to be vigilant. The dollar store has an entire aisle of costume jewelry, action figures, and toy cars from China. Just the sort of items recently found to have lead paint. But consumers can't rely on package warnings. Tom Neltner heads the nonprofit, Improving Kids' Environment.
The federal government doesn't have a systematic way to identify the problem. It's often left up to concerned citizens, consumer groups to test the products. We know of many products that have lead in them that complaints have been filed on that have not yet been recalled.
Last summer, when lead paint in Chinese toys made it to the U.S., big companies like Mattel invested millions of dollars to test their products and issued recalls. That's not the case with the importers that stock dollar stores. And Neltner says the federal government doesn't put a high priority on small batches of cheap trinkets.
If you're the Consumer Product Safety Commission and you've got so many recalls, hundreds of items with complaints on them, you're going to go for the one with a million items rather than just 5,000.
Which means that the government is effectively ignoring toys that end up in the hands of low-income children. A Nielsen study showed that almost half of regular dollar store shoppers live on less than $30,000 a year.
Some of the recent demographic changes indicate that now it's becoming a little more upscale, moving towards middle class and wealthy people who are interested in the garage sale aspect of it. Unfortunately, with that scavenger hunt, people aren't aware or aren't sensitive to the fact that there may be lead or cadmium in some of these products.
Neltner says that situation won't change until the government moves from a system that relies on recalls to one that checks the safety of imports at the border. In Austin, I'm Michael May for Marketplace.
One of the big issues of the day is how our consumption habits are affecting the planet. Some argue we should focus on our needs and check our wants at the door. But commentator Will Wilkinson says it's not quite that simple.
Critics often say capitalism produces, and we mindlessly consume, all sorts of junk we don't really need. We could live a lot more simply, more in tune with nature, with more time for one another. Some thinkers say that individualistic consumerism distracts us from more satisfying collective pursuits. Others urge us to pare down our consumption. They want us to minimize our carbon footprints, as if catastrophe draws closer with each trip to the store, with each exhale. The Greek philosopher Diogenes, who extolled the unencumbered life of the lowly dog, would have agreed. One day, Diogenes smashed his only possession, a wooden bowl, after seeing a peasant boy drink from his cupped hands. Today, there are Jainist monks in India who walk around naked. Who can commune with the transcendent when bogged down in grubby material things, like pants? Sure, most critics of consumption don't take it as far as Diogenes, but if you're going to take it anywhere, you've got to draw a line and say why pants and bowls go on one side of it, and iPhones and the 20-ounce soy milk mochaccino go on another. But why suppose there's one line? Different people have different aspirations and plans. They have different frames of reference for adequacy and excess. What each of us needs depends on what we are trying to make of our lives. Of course, moralizers of all stripes, from officious environmentalists to religious fundamentalists, have strong ideas about what we really need. But the fact you think you know what's best for me doesn't mean I don't really need my nose hair trimmer or my stuffed armadillo. I have my reasons. If this wild assortment of stuff was really crushing our souls, then maybe we ought to smash our flat screens like Diogenes smashed his bowl. But the evidence is clear. People are most likely to be happy, healthy, well-educated, and long-lived in places where people consume the most. Maybe we don't need to be happy or to live 80 years, but if we want to, then we've got a good thing going. Just don't trip over your Roomba.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. A link to his blog is on our website, marketplace.org. And while you're there, feel free to share your thoughts about robotic vacuum cleaners and stuffed armadillos. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.